bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yes, it's just me and Forsman today. Unfortunately, it looks like Alex's son's had a bit of an accident. So wishing him well, hope he's okay, and nothing too serious. A good bump and scrape, that's what every child needs. Definitely. If it's any more than that,
frankly,
don't do it. I'm here with Mr. Chris Forsman. We're going to talk the week's photography news. How you doing, bud?
Good morning.
Yes. Taking any pictures this week of any interest?
I don't believe I have.
I haven't. I've had 2 weeks at home with no work looking after the kids.
Yeah.
And my wife's back now, though.
My editor's been on vacation, so I've kind of been...
Cats away.
Yeah, I've been a little busy with work. And
straight in, then.
Let's do it.
The week in photo news. An artist has decided to take a picture of himself every day for a year to notice the change, but he's done it slightly differently than all the other artists that have done the same thing. He's left the lens cap on deliberately. So here's one of the images of him that day with the lens cap on, and here's another one. That's the following day. Interesting to see the change in the growth of his hair over the year, I thought.
Yeah,
because this is the one right at the start with his hair, and then this is the one right at the end with his hair. See the difference there?
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
What an arse.
Brilliant.
And talking of arses, Will.i.am, that well-known photographer, has decided to create an iPhone case. And he's created this iPhone case, which looks a bit blingy and a bit crappy, it has to be said. I wouldn't be doing it. To fit your iPhone 5, and it's called the Photo Dot Social. It probably does. There's probably something clever in that, but I can't see it myself. Like Will.i.am, it's Photo Show Show.
But it makes it 14 megapixels.
How? Just because of the fact it you can't change the sensor.
No, I don't know what it does. I think it has its own sensor in it or something. I mean, I don't. It's like $500. It's stupid.
It's monkey nuts. It's absolutely ridiculously crap. It's got a Bluetooth keyboard in it, has it, as well, hasn't it?
I just feel like Will.i.am is really frustrated that Kanye West has more hubris than he does. So he's just trying to, like, you know.
And Dickhead 1 and Dickhead 2, says Windrider in the chat room. Thank you, Pete. That's kind of boiled our opinions down there straight away then. Perfect. If you're Will.i.am and you're getting into photography and design your own camera gear, don't. You can't sing. I've heard you without the auto-tune on. You really can't sing. Don't get into photography. First thing then, Nikon has created a very special limited edition lens. It comes in a nice steel or aluminium box. It's an f1.8. They do them in 28, 50, and 85 mil versions in the box.
Ooh, 28. 1.4.
1.4. No, I'm showing 1.8 here on this story.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the inside, the branded aluminium case, there's three f1.8 lenses, the 28, the 50, and the 85.
Nikon rumors are saying 1.4, but either way.
Manuals, hoods, and soft cases provided.
Still sweet.
It's $1,200 for the whole thing, which I don't... there's another version as well, sorry. There's another set out that are 1.4, so there's two lots.
Oh, okay.
There we go. $1,600 for the 1.4 and $1,200 for the 1.8s. There you go. What do you think?
I like it. I like the idea of it. I mean, it's a good idea, I feel like. You know, the 1.4 set is 24, 35, and 85.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good set of prime lenses. So if you want to have a nice, good set of prime lenses, this is a good set.
Well, it's Nikon's own glass. You got three lenses at $400 a piece, effectively, or $800 a piece. $500 a piece. And I think the value is probably there or thereabouts, isn't it? I was a bit taken aback by the price to start with, but then I sat and thought about it, and limited edition, quality glass, nice case to carry it around. You're not going to get them damaged if you were going out for the day and you want to carry the case around. It probably looks quite nice. It's fairly small from what it seems on the photographs. So thumbs up on the value or not, Chris?
Well, just about. I'm looking at this post on Nikon Rumors, and they're saying that these sets in Belgium are selling for like 4,900 euros.
Wow.
Which is a lot of money, but that's $1,000 cheaper than buying all those lenses separately.
Yeah.
Or 1,000 euros, sorry. I'm not too on top of the exchange rates lately, so I don't know.
Sorry, how much are you saying that they're selling for? 1,400 euros.
4,800 euros.
4,800 euros?
Yeah, for the 1.4 set.
Well, that's about $5,000.
Yeah.
Well, the retailers are selling the box sets for $1,259 on the story that I've got for the F1.8.
Well, those lenses are different prices. 1.4 lenses usually sell for quite a bit more than 1.8 lenses.
Not that much.
But I'm just going by what I'm seeing here from Nikon Rumors. Right, they're saying in Belgium you can get this 1.4 set for almost 5,000 euros.
Okay, well, the Nikkor set on Petapixel is showing at 1,200, 1,600. So, and to buy the lenses separately would cost you 1,400. So it's only $200 extra for the box.
And now, Nikon Rumors is saying that these lenses, these 1.4 lenses combined on Amazon in Europe would sell for almost 6,000 euros.
So that's a good deal then.
So it's 1,000 euros off for the set. For this 1.4 set,
I've got no prices on those. I've only got the prices on the 1.8s.
Yeah. So
the 1.8s seem okay at that kind of price. Yeah. Very good. If you've got a Nikon camera, then that's obviously the one that you go for. Photoshop has released a version of itself in Retina display compatibility mode type thing. The latest version has got the capability of using the full Retina display on the 13 and 15 inch Macs. My question to you, Chris, is having used both of these machines, which I haven't used them extensively, I've only used them in the shop a little while, would Photoshop actually manage to work at full res on these things? Because I know they're quite intensive. Mustang Matt, one of the followers on Twitter, was telling me when I saw him in the pub the other week that on full screen applications, these things really struggle.
Here's what I can say. They don't really struggle in my experience, but I've been running Photoshop CS3 for way too long, frankly, and it looks like garbage. Lightroom is out in with a Retina compatible version. It looks great.
Lightroom's been out for a couple of weeks, hasn't it?
Photoshop was rumored to come out on December 11th. What I can say is I'm extremely confident that rumor is true.
Right.
That there will be a fully Retina compatible Photoshop on December 11th.
Yeah, that's the date they're showing. It was scheduled for December 5, but now it's December 11.
And what Adobe has done is they've shown up. So they're going to have this big announcement on the 11th, and they've posted this teaser video, and some people have like kind of dug into the video and zoomed in on it, and they've noticed that the software is clearly running on a Retina display on the latest 15-inch MacBook Pro. And it looks good so far, what we've seen. And I think it's going to be a big improvement. Because honestly, it's great that software that hasn't been updated can just run pixel doubled. But it's just like when we got Retina displays on like the iPad and the iPhone. When you see apps that do that, it stands out like a sore thumb. Because you see all these other apps that have been updated and everything's so sharp, and you literally forget you're looking at pixels. Like your mind just thinks you're looking at a piece of paper, like straight out of a laser printer is what it looks like. And then when you see one of these pixel doubled apps, it just drives you nuts.
I've got to say that I've struggled to come up with my own mind for a use case for buying the Retina. I mean, because of what it does to you in terms of hobbling your ability to expand it, adding of drives, adding of memory and that kind of stuff. And then with the the graphics on the top, I just don't think I'd use the graphics and the Retina display screen to its big enough potential to make it worthwhile me jumping ship from me 15-inch MacBook Pro that looks perfectly fine as it does.
I'm not going to be
selling the images for anymore.
Right. I mean, it's hard to say. My only advice is to, if you can, just take yours down to an Apple store, set them side by side, and see if the difference appeals to you.
Mm.
That's all I can really say.
Yeah.
There are definitely some issues now, because we're dealing with this at ours. I'm trying to encourage our developers to enable our publishing system to pump out Retina compatible images, because when I load up ours website, everything looks awesome except for the pictures. They just look blurry.
Mm.
And so it's frustrating for me, and the same is true even on the iPad, because we're still making images assuming people have low resolution displays. And unfortunately,
which the majority probably do, though.
They're still working on like kind of a universal spec to use for HTML5 for this to be common. But now there's all these tricks like using CSS and JavaScript and swapping images, detecting if it's a retina type display or not, and swapping the images. And there's some other techniques out there to do this. But you get into this argument. It's like, okay, how many people actually have retina displays versus normal people? Is it worth the time? Is it worth this and that and the other? And there's it's not just ours. It's like kind of struggling with this. But when you see a website that does it right, it really catches your attention.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, oh wow, I can see details in that picture. It's amazing.
Mm.
I've just been in the habit of making images that are double the size and uploading them. So, whenever they get, the feature ready, the images I've uploaded will automatically serve in Retina resolution. When you see it, you feel it. It's hard to say when you see it.
Don't start crying on us or anything, mate. Steady hand. You changed my life.
I love you, man.
It's like spending a week in a kibbutz. The Canon 7D Mark II rumors specs have been out there as a rumor. They're saying new ergonomic design. Looks the same to me, but never mind. 24.2 megapixels, 10 frames a second, dual card slot. Doesn't say what the cards are going to be. And it's got a new battery. Well, Canon wouldn't upgrade a new camera without making sure that the battery was incompatible. There are bastards for that, and I hate them. There we go. I got that out of my system. 24 megapixels. On a 7D, you could kind of imagine it on the 5D or on the 1X and that kind of stuff, but do they really need to put it on the 7D? Isn't 7D a kind of a lesser spec? You're not going to be pushing the pros for this, are you?
I don't think it's going to push the price that much. I think this 24 megapixel APS-C sensor is becoming somewhat more common in other cameras now. Like Sony has one out that for an APS-C size and full frame, and a lot of cameras are using it. Canon designs their own.
Do you think this is just a unification, though, to make production costs cheaper because they're now putting the same sensors across the wider range of the cameras, therefore their unit costs will diminish?
No, because it's not going to be full frame. It's going to be APS-C, and it's going to be the only camera I think Canon has at this resolution. And Canon makes their own sensors.
Surely full frame aspect of it, though, is the mounting position. If they're unifying the sensor, if it's the same sensor that's in the other one,
it's not. It's an APS-C. It's
completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's an APS-C sensor. I think the thing that's most odd about this is the 10.2 frames per second. I mean, that seems exceptionally fast.
Oh, that's brutally fast. Mine allegedly, my 1DS Mark II allegedly shot at 9 frames a second, which it never has. It's always topped out at sort of 5 frames a second. And supposedly the 60D can do 9 frames a second. So it is quite impressive.
Hmm. I mean, imagine pumping that much data at that speed. It seems really surprising.
Well, I mean, this is what they're saying about the dual card slot. No mention of the card types as yet, but that's going to be crucial. The card that you put in is going to have at least the right speed to cope with that 60 megabits a second or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the buffering's got to be huge. So, no word on price either. But what are you expecting? A couple of grand?
Yeah. I imagine it's going to come in right about at or right slightly above the current 70D, and the current 70D will probably drop in price.
No word on the video enabling on it, though.
No.
Whether it's improved or not.
I have a good friend that shoots in studios, though, and he said he tried out the 70D and was just so unimpressed with the noise response. I think it's just a mistake to cram this many megapixels into a smaller sensor.
Well, I think for stills, there's a definite improvement in stills as far as the 5D goes. For video, I've tried the 7D, the 5D, and the D600 side by side for video. I can't tell the difference. Can't tell the difference at all. I'm a great expert. What do I know? There's a new camera out there for capturing stuff. This is from Swan. Now, you might know Swan from their security camera market. They do big systems, remote systems with wireless connectivity that you can put around your house, have the box up in your loft, and it'll record a month's worth of footage of what's going on around the house. They've come out with this remote outback sensor. It's $99, and you strap it to a tree and put your camera on, and it's motion compatible, so it'll shoot animals as they move past or something like that. It's got a little LED light so it can shoot at night and scare the crap out of them when they come past it. There's no word on whether it does time-lapse, and I've got to say, if it does time-lapse, my card's out, because I want two of these. It'll shoot time-lapse at 11 megapixels. 5 megapixels, which is more than enough for a decent time-lapse film. And for £99, I've got a job coming up where there's a bridge repair and they want it all captured on time-lapse. And I've got to be there the whole time just changing batteries. I've got nothing else to do but charge and change batteries. This might be great if I could power it by mains, but it hasn't got a mains adapter either. So, do you ever use for any of this kind of stuff, Chris? Do you like doing a bit of wildlife photography?
No, it's just never interested me. Which probably explains why I'm not really a dog lover, I'm guessing.
So, I don't know. Where would you put this thing? Would you buy one of these? Would you keep it? Would you use it?
I feel like I'd put it like in the bathroom or the kitchen, and just so I can prove.
Don't turn this into a podcast. I've got to edit.
No, nothing like that. But I suspect that there are things the teen is doing that are unsavory. No, that's not right. I think that he's getting into things he shouldn't be getting into.
Do you need to move on from this story quickly?
But I just want proof before I lay the blame. That's all.
Moving on swiftly. Flickr have come out with a whole pile of clothing. You can look trendy. You can have a Flickr t-shirt with a picture of a Hasselblad on it, or an old Contech, or a Polaroid or something. Whatever you want.
Boss, it's Hasselblad.
Hasselblad, yeah. The Hasselblad picture is quite impressive. Whoever drew it must have been about 4. But the perspective's not bad. I thought that was a Minolta when I first saw it, I have to say.
Minolti?
Aye, but it's not. It's a Hasselblad, apparently. But they couldn't be bothered to write Hasselblad properly on the top of it. There's no word on price on these things. I couldn't find a price on the story. I may not have looked very hard. But it's available through the Flickr website if you want them. There's actually quite a cool one that's got the blue and pink dot on it, which only people who are into Flickr would know what that was.
Yeah.
$17 each. There we go. All the t-shirts are $17 a piece. So
I just might order a set, in fact. This is
If you're Marissa Mayer, what do you do to try and improve income to Yahoo? You sell t-shirts about Flickr? No? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think Togs would be interested in this.
I hate that word.
Natch.
But there we go. Those are the Flickr shirts with nice pictures on them. $17 a piece if you want one.
I like the iPhone one. I'm blue. That's
the iPhone one. The iPhone one. The poor woman that's on that has got it. The hands for that are so inappropriately placed. Hang on, let me find the image. Here we go. It's really bad.
It could be a lot. I think it could be a lot worse.
If all you had to do would make the iPhone just a little bit bigger, and they'd be in a really bad position. But there you go. If you want a picture of some innate, but that looks like one of those. I got a book on ergonomics that I had from when I was at college, and it's by a bloke called Vern Putz Anderson, and it's or three blokes, and it's got graphics like that in it of people's hands, some inanimate bloke's hands, but I don't know. I don't like that. It's a bit creepy. There we go. And the last one of the stories I think that's worth covering is a great little device. This thing supposedly is the answer to all your problems because it's going to control your Canon and Nikon via your iPhone. It's called a Cam Ranger. You can get up to 150 feet away with an iPad, an iPhone, or an iPod Touch. You can see what your camera's looking at, and then you can take a picture. It's £269, and it's a little tiny backpack that connects remotely and sits at the bottom of your tripod onto your Canon or your Nikon. And you can shoot, you shutter release the whole thing. So you can get a nice little bit away from wild animals and things like that if you want to try and capture them that way or for your own safety. And you get an instant histogram as well back with it, and all the metadata comes through onto it. It looks a fantastic little device. £269, is that a bit pricey? Or
No. I mean, in the scheme of things, if you're talking about any kind of like professional or even amateur work for someone who's committed enough to be doing these kind of setups in the first place, where they might be able to use something like this, it seems totally worth it to me.
Mm.
You know, maybe I'm wrong, but
it's available from camranger.com, or you can go to intro 2020, which are on 01628 674411, and have a play with it. I'm going to give them a call and ask them if we can get a review unit through and have a play with it. But that it looks interesting. It's just the 270 puts me off a little bit, because for that kind of money you can get a low-end GoPro, or you can get some really good accessories, a decent quality lens perhaps. You've got to really want to shoot remotely to get that, pay that kind of money for it, I would have thought.
Yeah, but I think it just the way it enables everything, and you know, adds interval shooting and all kinds of things you can control and adjust, right? You know, and I'll tell you, you know, people always make fun of people who use iPads as cameras because they kind of look ridiculous, and there's really no kidding around that. It does look kind of ridiculous holding this huge tablet taking a picture with it.
Look, my daughter gets hold of my camera and tries to use it as an iPad.
There you go.
She doesn't work. Any screen she gets, she just does this with it.
Starts touching.
Not working, Daddy.
But, you know, something to remember. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when people used 4x5, field cameras to take pictures with. So, I mean, that's the first thing I think of when I see someone using an iPad as a camera. It looks ridiculous now because we have these tiny phones and things to take pictures with, but the thing is, on the iPad, your viewfinder is enormous. I mean, it's almost like looking at an 8x10 ground glass.
Yeah. No, I like it. I've got to say, I love taking pictures with the iPad Mini. I think that really is a perfect size because it's easy to go in and out of a pocket. It is a better compact camera than anything else I've got. Better than the iPhone as well, even though the image quality is not so good. But excellent. Let's do some questions. Your questions. If you want to send us a question, then all you got to do is write to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. Put it in and we'll read it out. Everyone who writes in will at least answer it, even if we don't get to read all of them out. But every question gets a typed reply off me if we don't read it out, so don't worry. Question one. Hi, guys. This is from Mark in London. Love the show. Thanks for all your help and advice. Welcome, mate. I've got a question about camera batteries. This is quite an interesting one for me because I've got the same kind of problem with an old Canon battery on my 1DX Mark II. He said he bought a Nikon D3000 in 2010. The battery that came with the camera was always pretty good, and I often got nearly a day's shooting out of it. However, It barely now lasts for 2 hours, and I've come to wonder if it's on its last legs. So two questions. A, should I have expected more out of the battery, and should I contact Nikon to complain? And B, should I consider only a Nikon battery to replace it, or should I look at other brand batteries as well? Good question.
Yeah. Is it on its last legs? Most likely. Very likely. Should you have expected more out of the battery? Probably not.
That's going to depend on cycles, though, isn't it? I mean, it's 2 years. Yeah. I wouldn't have expected a battery to crap out after 2 years, unless it's pretty heavy-duty recharging.
Most lithium-ion batteries, the typical chemistry will last about 500 charge cycles.
Is it an L-ion or a C3000?
What's that?
Is it an L-ion or is it a NiCad?
It's lithium-ion.
Right, okay.
And so typically about 500 charge cycles, a little more, a little less, depending, and it also can vary, due to tolerances and things like that.
So a charge once a week for 2 years is only going to be 100 cycles.
Yeah.
500 but it sounds cycles to me, is 5 times a week.
Yeah, it sounds to me like he was using it quite a bit more.
Okay.
Than once a week.
Well, if you're up to if you're up to 3 cycles a week, I would have suggested that's probably pretty close, because we're talking 18 months here. If he bought it at the start of 2010, which I don't know. Would you suggest a call to Nikon and ask him to expect more from it? I mean, there's a good chance you take it into a shop, they might replace it.
If it were within a year, I would expect them to. But it's out of warranty. I don't expect them to.
No, I don't expect him to, but you never know, eh?
It's true. That's true.
Give it a shot.
If you bought it especially if you bought it in a local shop and went back to them.
Yeah, good customer. Play the good customer card.
Yeah, I mean they have their own personal latitude with their own personal business. They, we'll just give you one. That might happen. Certainly that is worth discussing, but I'm confident that it's probably just the battery has worn out.
What about the?
I've got my 20D 4K camera that I've had almost 10 years now, and the original battery that came with it just doesn't even. I keep it as a backup just in case, but it lasts maybe an hour.
Well, that'd tops. Be Nikon. Oh, right. I mean, that'd be NiCad as well, though, wouldn't it? That'd be a nickel cadmium battery.
It's an early lithium ion.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Mine are nickel cadmium for the 1DS Mark II. They're 8 years old. And the one I bought with it is still going, and I bought a second one and it's gone on. Second question, should I consider only Nikon batteries to replace it with, or should I buy other brand batteries? Well, I bought a Hanel when I first got my Canon, and I ended up throwing it away. It lasted probably about a year. I got nowhere near more than 150, 200 cycles out of it. Not a chance. So... no, I would say don't buy other brand batteries. What's your view?
I tend to stick with the. Excuse me, I have a little itch in my nose here. I'm trying to sneeze. I tend to stick with the manufacturer batteries. I have used some off-brand batteries in the past, but like you said, the experience I had weren't as reliable, and. Tend to get, maybe they're not put together as well. I was looking for a replacement for a camera that was a slightly older, and I couldn't find the official Canon one, and I wanted one right away, so I got an off-brand one, and it was just like, I mean, it wasn't sealed properly, and I was frankly afraid that if I tried to use it, it would explode, so I just didn't even use it.
Yeah, the only thing you can say about other brand batteries is you'll probably pay less than half price, so... A standard replacement battery for mine was £70, and I paid £32.50 or something like that for the Hanel. So if you say, right, it's a year's worth of free shooting on that, and it lasted as long. There was no question it lasted as long. But it just, towards the end, it was getting run out of charge within 2 hours instead of going a whole day. But it's a battery for a year for £35. If you see it that way, I suppose.
Yeah.
If anyone's got in the chat room's got a good story to tell about other Mamarachis, type it in and I'll read it out. Question two. Hi, you and Alex, Kevin and Chris. With silly season approaching, I'm thinking of getting my 13-year-old daughter a camera for Christmas. She's always loved using my compact camera, but I think she should have her own camera. And who knows, perhaps it'll inspire her to learn more to do with photography. What should I be looking for in a camera? What should I be looking for in any camera I purchase? And should I get a compact camera, bridge camera, or DSLR for her? Cheers for any advice you can offer. Gary Burton in Liverpool. Mm-hmm. What do you think, mate? Ms. Burton. Well, I hope she doesn't listen to the show because she knows she's getting a camera for Christmas then.
Yeah.
Does she still believe in Santa?
For silly season. Silly season. I feel like if he would want to inspire her to learn to do more with photography, probably something like some of the, you know, the compact mirrorless DSLRs might be a really good option. Even in, you know, and it's hard to say
G3 or Lumix G3 or the J series stuff from Nikon.
Yeah, I was gonna say maybe something on the lower end of the price scale. Olympus has like a mini pin. I forget what the model is, what they call it now, but it's basically just a small pin camera, and just the whole back of it is nothing but screen with a couple buttons and a lens mount on the front. But it's pretty reasonably priced to start out. The J series, the one series and icons. I think the J is the low end one.
Yeah.
And they come in all sorts of cool fashion colors, which I know some girls are really into. So you can get, yeah. You know, I'm just saying, some girls are into that. So you can get like red or pink. Or
my thought on this was you want something that's got good manual capability because you want her to be able to progress through aperture priority shooting, shutter priority shooting, and then into full manual if she's going to improve. And if she's going to take a class or something like that with a local photographer, they're going to be pushing her towards those priority settings or manual settings. Mm-hmm. And I thought as well, if she's got another 3 years to shoot with this before she hits 16, she gets a part-time job gives her a bit of cash to buy some extra lenses, then the flexibility in pricing of Micro Four Thirds or something like that's going to kick in as well, if there's a something in that kind of line that would be good. So go something that's got a bit more of a capability to get a cheaper and varied lens.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that the Nikon J series is pretty affordable and kind of cool looking, but I agree with you that on the point of Micro Four Thirds is actually a system where you've got two companies in particular designing world-class lenses. You've got Panasonic and which has lens designed done by Leica, and then you've got Olympus. But you also have, you know, Sigma and I think there's some other companies making Micro Four Thirds.
Yeah, the thing with Panasonic that's nice is they might not always make cameras that you want to buy because they look like a piece of Lego or something like that, but the quality of the build on those cameras is usually very, very good. The quality of the glass is excellent.
So. And both Panasonic and Olympus have a pretty good range of Micro Four Thirds cameras out there. Camera body options, I should say.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was going to even suggest is the tiny Pentax Q is a compact size, but still has the flexibility of, you know, full manual control. It has real dials on it for changing your settings, and they have interchangeable lenses. It's not as quite as versatile, but they have a pretty good set of lenses going now and have some more planned for the next year. And so maybe that might even be even more of a kind of a test the waters thing, because the price thing is not that much more than a nice compact, but you still get the ability to change lenses and manual control. You know, you can even add flashes and all kinds of things to it. So that'd be something I'd consider. I mean, I feel like that's something that I would do as a parent myself, but it's going to depend on, you know, I don't know your daughter. So it's going to depend a little bit on you to know, like.
And trust me, you're going to be grateful for the fact that Forsman doesn't know your daughter.
Oh, geez. but you know, it's going to take a little bit of your insight into her personality and her interests to kind of know which of those directions is really going to maybe appeal to her. But I think I agree with you that getting one of the smaller compact cameras that have interchangeable lenses. And there's a, like we just said, there's a couple, you know, there's a couple options out there now. Consider some of those. And that, you know, if she decides she never really wants to go anywhere with it, that's fine. She's still got a great camera that's really capable. And it's still fairly compact compared to, you know, one of the larger SLMs.
When buying a camera for a teenager, be sure to consider resale value on eBay.
another good consideration. Yeah, my girlfriend has a 16-year-old son, and he's always like, I want this, I want to get this new thing, and I want to. So last Christmas, he wanted a guitar really bad, and we got him a guitar. He's like, I'm going to take lessons, I'm going to learn how to play guitar, and he took lessons for maybe 5 or 6 months, pretty solid, and he's actually got quite good at it. And then one of his strings broke, and he tried to restring it, and he couldn't do it right, and he gave up. He hasn't even touched the guitar since then for months. And we're just like, we'll take you to the guitar store, and you know, it's like $5. They'll help you restring it. Or his aunt's boyfriend has been giving him lessons. He's like, I'll show you how to do it. And he's like, nah, I'll just give it up. I mean, I'm flabbergasted. Like, we really went out and like found him a really good guitar. And it's not, I mean, it's not an expensive guitar by any means, but it's certainly not the cheapest you can buy. And he just doesn't give a crap.
There you go, Gary. Our advice on buying a camera for your daughter is borrow a pair of trainers instead, because they'll probably last longer. Three. Hello, fellas.
Buy the camera you want.
Yeah, exactly. There's a good point. Hi, fellas. Love the show. Keep up the good work. Simple question, I guess. If I want to shoot black and white images with my digital camera, should I deliberately increase the ISO to put grain on the image at capture, or should I still shoot on the lowest ISO and then add grain afterwards in Photoshop? Thanks. Jerry Randall, Texas. Not from the USA. He's from Texas.
The country of Texas.
The country of Texas.
Commonwealth. Right. Commonwealth of Texas.
What do you reckon then, mate?
No, don't deliberately increase the ISO. Just shoot like you normally would. Shoot. I mean, there are certainly techniques you can use if you want to make, you know, you can use filters and you can switch to black and white mode. But honestly, I would shoot to make a great color image, because there's a bajillion things you can do in post-processing that would be the same things that you would end up doing on the camera to achieve a certain effect. And then that really gives you the most versatility, I think. Because you can really do, you know, whatever you want with it. If you want to make it look ultra contrasty, you can futz with the red channel in Photoshop, and it would be like as if you put a red filter on a lens and used it with black and white film. It's a, you know, something that I used to do that is almost exclusively shoot with a red filter, and everything was super contrasty. But then I learned I can just shoot well exposed images, and then I can mess around with the darkroom later.
I think the thing I would say, though, if you're going for that core grunge look where it looks like it's been shot in difficult conditions, very low light, the grain that's applied in those is that there are subtle changes in the grain depending on how well lit the area is that you're photographing. If you're talking about very dark areas, you'll get a very open grain, whereas then well-exposed areas will have a lot less grain apparently in them when you look at them. So there is an optical change within what you're looking for, which you'll only get with ISO at the shoot. But unless you really know your camera really, really well and know how it performs in certain conditions, adding it afterwards, not ideal, but it's probably safer.
No? Well, and what I would say is that like Tiffin, I know, Nick, all, and there's more, but they have these plugins for Photoshop that are like basically like a black and white darkroom, virtual darkroom thing. And they apply, like, they have grain profiles for like different films, like, so you can make it look like it was shot with like T-Max 400, you know, overdeveloped by one stop, or, you know, you can make it look like it was shot in Ilford Delta film with using Kodak Developer, and it has a slightly different grain pattern. I just feel like it's you're better off going for well exposed images just as you would normally shoot them, not even considering black and white, and then deal with it in post, because you know you just never know, like, you might see an image and it looks great and you're like, oh, I really want this to be black and white, blah, blah, blah. But then you see it and you're like, you know, what if I just did like a desaturated color effect, or what if, you know, you just get more versatility to kind of explore on one hand because you've got this great, well-exposed color image. But you've also got the chance that you might really end up with results that you weren't really expecting in the first place.
I think the one thing that you can always advise anyone who's shooting anything is learn your camera. I mean, when I get a new lens or I get a new body, I set up a little test shot out on the patio with set items at set distances. I learn what the focal lengths are. I learn what f-stop does at different distances. And also then put your camera through its paces on the ISO and see just how good and just how bad the ISO range is. And learn what it's like in different lighting conditions. And there's a certain element of adding grain afterwards. I know you get a better original and you can get the grain afterwards, but there's a certain unnatural quality with adding grain afterwards at times. So yeah, if you can learn it and you can shoot it the right way first time, it's obviously got to be better. Booker in the chat room says, exposed to get the most information and detail that you can on the image, it's much easier to take the information away than it is to add it in post. I would agree, but there is still no better option than learning your camera. Most definitely. Set up test shots. If you've got a question for us, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. We'll read it out. We'll have a go at answering it. Whether we get it right or not, it's up to us. Up to you. We'll see. Our opinions will be expressed either way.
Here's the thing. If you don't ask, we can't answer.
And we also need your vote, because we are one of six of our podcasts that are up for European Podcast of the Year. We were in it last year. We had the Max Show nominated and the Big Show nominated. The Max Show ended up finishing third in the European in the British category. So we did rather well. Thank you very much. We need you to vote for us. All of the six shows that we've got there listed on the screen, Mac, Big, Gamer, Media, iOS and Photo, are all nominated for Podcast of the Year awards. So please get your butts over to britishtechnetwork.com and you'll see the banner there that I'm showing on the video. Click on it and you'll get up with a question that says quality of the podcast and frequency and that kind of stuff. Give us 5 stars on that or whatever you think it's worth, and then click vote. If you close your browser and open it again, you can vote again, because they don't track your IP beyond that. Once your cookies are gone, that'll be it. They'll be in again. Please vote as much and as frequently as you can. Your vote means a lot to us, and if we win Podcast of the Year next year, who knows, we could be a media empire to rival Murdoch's by the end of the year.
Maybe companies would send us real review units.
They might, instead of us making it up as we go along. Voting is on from now until the middle of January, so you've got lots and lots of time to vote for us. Please vote lots, and then the winner's going to be announced on the 1st of March, and it's going to be us. Oh, it's going to be us. Please be us. Right, this podcast and all the others on the network are brought to you by UK2. They're brilliant. We love them to bits. They've got great customer services. They've got great products available. The £1 domains thing is now finished, but there was tons of those given away to our listeners, which was great. Thank you very much, UK2. And if you'd like to see what services they've got, then go to britishtechnetwork.com and click on the sponsors link, and you'll see all the offer codes that we've got and also UK2's logo. Click on the logo. It's a tracking link that knows that we've sent you then, so we get kudos for passing you on. Use your offer codes and you'll get fantastic reductions on all of your services from UK2. We love them to bits. They support us. They tick up all the bandwidth every month. It's about £400 worth of bandwidth that we get consumed each month by the podcasts. And simply without them, we go out of business. There's no way I could afford to keep that kind of payments up. So please support them, because they support British tech. Plain and simple. Right, where can you get a hold of you, Mr. Forsman?
You can get a hold of me at rstechnica.com, where I am always writing just brilliant tech writing. I mean, you cannot get quality tech writing.
I would have to agree with you on some occasions.
Okay, from time to time.
More often than not. Let's put it that way.
That sounds... I quite like that.
Yeah.
More often than not, it's really good.
More often than not, I don't talk bollocks. There you go.
Precisely. Although 100% of the time, guaranteed bollocks on Twitter, if you want to find me there, yes. @ForsMac.
Good man. And how long till you're a daddy?
We're going on almost 5 months.
All right, so four to go.
Maybe 4.5. So due date's April 14th.
We'll have to get pissed when it comes out then. We'll do the photo show and the Matt show absolutely blathered one day after the baby's born. Off our faces. Good man.
Yes.
And then you'll have to be responsible after that because you're a father then at that point. Grow up. We'll be back again next week as normal. Hope you have a great week. See you soon.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.